You are listening to the Cycling Podcast.
Hello and welcoming you on December the 16th in a week when two of Tadej Pogacar's teammates branded him a criminal. Yes, I bet that's made you sit up a bit straighter. My name's Daniel Freiber and I am the host of this episode of the Cycling Podcast, in which we will find out who were those accusers, exactly what crime the Slovenian is accused of committing and what else was said or alleged at the UAE Team Emirates training camp on the Costa Blanca. Costa Blanca? Is it the Costa Blanca? We'll find out in a minute. I think it is, but I always get confused about this. Last weekend. Anyway, joining me to do that today, our detective, our super sleuth on the ground in Spain, it's another Daniel after Daniel Benson last week. It's our good mate, Dani Arribas, who of course was at my side at the Vuelta a España in September. Dani, that's the last time I saw you in the flesh. Way back in September. Last time I saw you in the flesh, we were drinking tequila. That's another story. Or mezcal, something like that. Something like that. Something Mexican. Dani, how are you?
Everything good. So glad to be here again. I mean, there are a lot of Daniels in World Cycling, right?
On this podcast at the moment, there certainly are. Dani, is the Costa Blanca. Benidorm is the Costa Blanca, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Do we ever refer to a Costa de Valencia?
Not a specific name. I mean, Costa Blanca could be considered from Gandia or something like that. Somewhere over there to the south, until Alicante or even Murcia. That is all Costa Blanca.
And the next one up, north of the Costa Blanca?
Oh, didn't expect that exam here.
It's Costa de
Valencia, let's say.
Okay, there we go. I think we've kind of settled that. But Dani, you've been there doing the Costa crawl, the training camp crawl for us over the last few days. You were at Little Trek, and we're going to have another bulletin dispatch, a very extensive and exciting bulletin from you from the Little Trek camp next week. But UAE had taken up residence in Benidorm. Is that right?
Benidorm was the place chosen by UAE for the second year in a row. I think last year they were there as well. I cannot remember 2 years ago. I don't think they were there. But yeah, for the second year in a row, they're based in Benidorm. And they seem pretty happy to be there, to be honest.
Yeah, happy to be in Benidorm. Dani, we always get in trouble for being unkind about Benidorm because it doesn't have the best reputation always. I won't say any more. It's a good place to eat a sort of an English breakfast. If you want to eat an English breakfast in Spain, you can find it. I can confirm, because I've been there a few times, you can find one in Benidorm. But by all accounts, a great place to train. And of course, it's very close to Calpe and Denia, all those places where the other teams have all based themselves, and some of them I think are still probably down there on 16th of September, probably about to leave, but over the last few weeks. Dani, today's episode is going to be dedicated to Pogacar, the big reveal of his race program for 2026. But before we get to that, there has been some more exciting news, I suppose, from Spain in the last few days. Now, I said the last time we saw each other was at the Vuelta a España in September. Of course, the last week, Dani, when you were with me, was very much overshadowed by protests at the Vuelta a España. Of course, that sort of catastrophic last stage of the Vuelta, which ended up being cancelled. And, well, among the footnotes to that Vuelta a España has been the rebranding of the Israel Premier Tech team as NSN Cycling Team, a Swiss-licensed team with, we have been told, a Catalan or Spanish soul or DNA. We have not been entirely sure about exactly how this has happened. NSN is a company that, well, not many people will have known until about 10 days ago. One of the few things that they know now is that it was co-founded by former Barcelona footballer Andrés Iniesta. He's not involved in the management, certainly the sporting management of this new cycling team. But we're about to hear from a man who is. Of course, NSM were also in the news last week because they announced their big signing of the off-season, and that is Biniam Gamai, who is joining the team. Shortly after his signing was announced, I managed to catch up with the team manager, Kiel Kallstrom, and I asked him to explain a little bit more about how this deal, how this rebranding has come about, exactly what role, if any, the former team owner Sylvain Adams has, and also what he's expecting from Biniam Gamai next year.
For us, of course, we have already for a few years been a team that have tried to become a team that can win in sprints. It hasn't succeeded in for one or the other reason, really, as we had hoped. And as such, it was a logical next step to take from our perspective. And I think from Biniam's perspective, I believe, without putting any words in his mouth, that he saw us a well-functioning team that that have a good culture and are really trying to be performant and performance-oriented. So that's something that I think he valued from the conversations.
I wanted to understand how... So it kind of came out of the blue for a lot of people. The team became an NSN. We knew that the team would probably change identity, but none of us saw it coming. You know, who was going to come on board, who the new sponsor was going to be. So can you talk me through, as much as you know or can say, from like after the Vuelta?
The reality is that we got the demands from Factor and Premier Tech to change the name and the flag. And that was when we really started to work on it. We understood that it is necessary, and we had a few different avenues immediately. When we made the announcement, it was only a few hours actually before we got the first contact, and then we went along those roads. We tried to negotiate with them for title sponsorship, some of them looked really, really promising. Some of them less, and it took some time. But then, because we had this existing partnership with Stoneweg, who is of course a financial investment company, and they had also very good connections, and that's how everything then happened with the NSN. The others fell through or couldn't commit in time, and this seemed like a great opportunity also to cross over with another sport, which is soccer in this case.
Well, so when you say we started looking, who's we? Who are the individuals in the organization that were involved in that?
It was mainly I and Phoebe Hames, now the title is Chief Marketing and Communications Officer. Actually, anybody that has good connections were invited to give to raise up and talk about it. And of course, then also Ido Shavit, who has been the CEO for the last few years. So we worked together and we looked into everything that we could.
What role did Sylvain have?
Well, the role that he had was to give us the okay to go ahead and remove himself.
So they're not they weren't his contacts. I mean, Stoneweg obviously.
From some parts, yes. We explored also the potential contacts through him, but in the end, it didn't materialize.
Is it his money still?
No.
Is any of it his money?
No, it's not. So that was the other thing that you know. In the end, we were needing to look into how we can do this. In a good way, and fortunately, we found a solution that we could get enough budget for the team to continue as it has been doing in the last few years.
He, I believe, was at the training camp a couple of weeks ago. Sort of in what capacity? And in what capacity? I mean, is he now just a supporter, or what is his relationship with his team?
Yeah, I mean, that was the main thing, was to finalize the deal with NSN. And then also to ride with the guys, because in the end, that's what he has always been passionate about. I wouldn't exclude the possibility that he would come visit the team at some point during the year, because in the end, he has supported the team for 10 years almost. Yeah. Of course, it's something that has been a big part of our history and his last few years.
As far as sponsorships go, it doesn't look like the traditional one where a company is just looking for exposure, brand recognition. I mean, there's Stoneweg and then there's NSN. I mean, can you just explain, to the best of your knowledge, what these two companies, what these two entities are getting out of this, or what are they hoping for from it?
Well, I think, first of all, expand their businesses, because in the end, I think being part of a team and having that kind of visibility is valuable for both of the companies, and different kinds of new connections, networking. But they also see a great possibility in cycling. That we can do things better than what we have done in the past as a sport.
NSN in particular, again, you know, it's a kind of new, fairly new entity, and people maybe will have a hard time understanding how exactly they make their money and what their business model is. You know, they see the potential in cycling, but is that in terms of, I don't know, the one cycling project maybe materializing and generating revenue, or selling the sponsorship of the team? Or
I wouldn't say that there's only one thing. I think that they see it in a lot of different ways. But I mean, they are promoting and have promotional events, and they have they are arranging games and things like this, including then having rights in different areas of, for example, soccer or entertainment business. So in that sense, they are making their money, I think it's a big business. That's just my opinion, of course. But in terms of cycling, I think there's so many different opportunities that cycling could develop further. And those are, of course, some of the things that NSN have said, that this is actually very interesting. This is something that could be expanded and could be made better.
The mayor of Barcelona was at your sort of launch the other day, if I'm not mistaken. I think I saw quotes from him.
Correct.
And Jaume from Stoneweg has talked about the team's, I think the words he used was Barcelona soul, or Barcelona DNA. How much is the Tour de France starting in Barcelona? How much is that the sort of, well, not the main reason for NSN's involvement, but how important is that in terms
of? I think
of,
it's, of course, it's a great, maybe catalyst would be the right word for it, because in the end, it is a great opportunity for high visibility and connecting to NSN, connecting to the team in that sense. And if we would be able to do something great in Barcelona, then that would be definitely an icing on the cake, no question. So of course, we are working towards having a great season, but in particular, the start in Barcelona. If we could pull off a stage victory there, it would be perfect.
There's been some speculation, concerns, I suppose you could say, from people that they rightly or wrongly, through no fault of your own, you might still be the target of opposition or protests in Barcelona, even maybe at the Volta a Catalunya, other races. Are you worried about that?
No, I'm not. I worried is maybe I wouldn't say that I'm thinking too much about it, but the reality is that cycling as a whole is vulnerable because of the fact that we are on open roads, and I think it would be hugely detrimental if that would happen, no matter for which reason. But I think it would be completely unfounded if it would be for us. That's my personal feeling. We are a sports team, as everybody else, and sports should not be mixed with violent protests. I think protests are completely fine, but as long as they are sticking to some kind of rules, doesn't matter whether it's about sports or close to a sports event or anything else. It should always be respected in that way.
20 minutes without mentioning Andres Iniesta, so we've done pretty well. Well, Danny, some answers there. Still a few more questions. I think I'm going to post Danny the full interview on our 11:01, sorry, cappuccino. Our Substack, both the transcript and maybe the full audio as well. It's about 25 minutes, not enough time to listen to all of it there. I was sort of kicking myself for not pressing him harder on a few things, like, for example, Kiel saying there that Sylvain Adams might yet ride with the team at future training camps or at future races. He might drop in. I suppose the question I should have asked him there was, well, why? Why are you going to allow him to do that? I suppose Kiel probably would have told me, well, you know, he's still a friend of the team, even if he's not an investor. Of course, knowing about some of the sort of more inflammatory statements that Sylvain Adams has made over the last few years in sort of defense of Israel, it occurs to me that might still be seen as politically sort of delicate and dangerous. However, Danny, I just wanted to get your view on this and how it's been reported in Spain. Obviously, you know, to all intents and purposes now, Israel is out of the picture. So, in theory, no one should really have any problem with NSN or what they represent, what they're promoting. Interestingly, talking about sort of nationalities and identities and politics, it struck me that this sort of Catalan identity might be quite slightly problematic, maybe for some people, for some Spanish people. But Danny, just in general, obviously, well, we heard his joke there about Andres Iniesta. It wasn't really mentioned in the conversation, but that's been, I guess, the main takeaway, the main headline in Spain, that Iniesta is somehow involved. But how's this gone down, and what do you make of it all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the simple presence of Andres Iniesta in the team has it is the flashy thing here in Spain. I mean, is the all the headlines have Andres Iniesta on their own? But I mean, I don't know how much an importance is Andrés Iniesta having in the team, but for sure in the team presentation, he said to the media present over there in Barcelona that he grew up as a big cycling fan. Iniesta is from was born in 84, so he grew up for sure in a time where not just Perico del Prado, but especially Miguel Indurain were winning Tour de France here in Spain, so I have no doubt that that is true. I mean, of course, many people in Spain were just following cycling on that time, but at the same time, it's quite surprising, let's say, that Andrés Iniesta has this big link right now with the cycling team, as there were not news that he was going to do nothing related to cycling until the moment. But yeah, I mean, of course, it is something that has kept the attention of mass media here, of the public. And I would say that probably most of the people are just identifying the team like Andres Iniesta's team more than former Israel Premier team.
Yeah, and there is this sort of air of kind of mystery, which may well be dissipated. You know, when we go to races and when we're able to talk more to the likes of Kjellstrøm, maybe we'll get all of the answers that we're looking for. I mean, the team and the team's reputation will live or die by, well, I think in the fullness of time, people will ultimately find out if there is anything sort of mysterious or if there is anything untoward behind this team. I think because we're sort of unfamiliar with the companies behind the team and maybe their conception of sponsorship, then and also obviously with how sort of quickly this is kind of unusual, how quickly this has all come to pass when you think about teams that spend months and years looking for new sponsors, and this all seems to have happened very quickly. You know, if we find out that Sylvain Adams and his money is still sort of lurking, then, you know, the team will kind of suffer the consequences of that. But I suppose at the moment, we have to take them at face value and see how they get on in the first few months of the season with Biniam Girmay very much the star name in their 2026 roster. Incidentally, I mentioned Little Trek. I did ask Kjell Kjellstrøm if there was any way back for Derek G. We know he's been in dispute with the team. He said probably not. We have since heard, or since I had that conversation with Kjell Kjellstrøm, we have heard that Derek G is probably going to sign with Little Trek. By the time we do our Little Trek podcast next week, Danny, we probably will have an answer as well on whether Derek G is going there or not.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
You have to choose between winning Paris Roubaix for the first time or your fifth time to Tour de France. What do you choose and why?
I think I would choose Roubaix, yeah, because I won already 4 times Tour, and if you win 4 or 5, it's not... I think it's bigger difference between 0 and 1 than between 4 and 5. Yeah, it was really good off season, but every year it's too short. you would always need some extra days. I think everybody thinks the same always. The vacations are always too short. But I had a good time. I must say I did a lot of different things. I see the world a bit different, and yeah, it was good reset. And now we're back at training camp, full gas training with the guys, and yeah, it's been good reset, and I think we are ready to start again the new year. I mean, yeah, but of course there's always some room to improve. Is it performance wise or just mental or physical or just the way of living? You can always, I think, improve, and yeah, maybe. We don't know if 20 minute power can be even better. But yeah, there's still other things that you can work on that you maybe lack on, and yeah, you focus on that. And but I think I don't need to improve much more. So if I keep the same level, I will be more than happy. So my program will be classics, like now almost every year. I will start with the Strade Bianche, move on to Sanremo, so a bit in Italy. Then it's Flanders, Roubaix, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Tour, and then we see. I think it's good enough. Before the Tour, I do two weeks races also in Swiss. Romandy in Swiss, so I'm looking forward for the new challenges.
Well, Danny, I referred earlier to the big reveal, the open sesame moment of the UAE Team Emirates training camp. We'd all been sort of speculating about Tadej Pogacar's race program, and there he was announcing it, as well as talking about a few other things like Paris-Roubaix and why that's such a big motivation for him, how he would choose Paris-Roubaix victory over another fifth Tour de France victory. But at the end there, we heard him announcing his race program: Strade Bianche, Milan-San Remo, Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Romandie, Tour de Romandie, Tour de Suisse. He's doing the Rivella program. Danny, do you know what Rivella is? The greatest soft drink ever invented. Only available in Switzerland. Pretty much only available in Switzerland. So he's doing those two Swiss stage races. Having only, I worked out earlier this week, he's only raced three times in Switzerland, on 3 days in Switzerland as a professional. One of them was in the Tour de France in Lausanne, I believe. One was Lugano. And one was, when was it? Oh, World Championships that he won, of course. And then he's going to do the Tour de France. Now, Danny, we are going to discuss whether this is a good race program or a bad race program a little bit later on. But generally speaking, first of all, Danny, I said this was a big reveal. It was also a big event. These media days are becoming more and more, well, they're becoming better and better sort of organized. I don't know whether there are more attendees than there once were, but this felt like the moment, maybe even more than the presentation of the sort of Tour de France route. This felt like the media moment of the winter, of the off season. Did it feel like that in the hotel on the ground?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as we were talking before, this is not the first time that UAE is doing its training camp or its presentation in this hotel in Benidorm. It's not that new for a cycling team, because Katusha did it like 6 years ago, I think, in 2018, first year that the hotel was opened. But yeah, I mean, of course, UAE is another thing. It's the best team in the world for a reason, and there were plenty of journalists over there. I would say like almost 100 just in today's press conference. So it was a packed place, of course. And I could say, to be honest, Daniel, that I saw a more relaxed today Pogacar in this case. Of course, he's not racing right now. I mean, it's, I think, a very important key to understand why he could be more relaxed. But especially compared to that third week or that second half of the last Tour de France, or the second half of the year, to be honest. The other day in Benidorm, he was kind of chill, even joking with the press, pointing out the journalist to give the word to them, just mixing this rider and press officer role to the moment. So yeah, it was like a different Pogacar than we are used to see in the racing part of the season, but pretty much packed of journalists. Yep.
Auditioning for a future as a press officer, that would be an unusual career pivot. Not one I would recommend. Not one many of our press officer colleagues would recommend. I don't think they get paid quite as well as he does. Danny, what were his? Because it was about half an hour, wasn't it? The press conference. We're going to hear a little bit more of it in just a moment. But what were his other obligations on the day? Because this is going to be, well, it's another one of the narratives And in fact, we're going to hear him refer to it, I think, in a minute, just the obligations that he has to face in his current position and how this adds to, exacerbates any mental fatigue that he might be feeling now in, what is it, the seventh year? His seventh year as a professional, sixth or seventh year?
It is.
Yeah. Did you, you know, was he sort of bombarded all day? Was he doing lots of one-on-one interviews, or was it sort of a one and done, half an hour and that's your lot, chaps?
Well, it was more of a one and done, but not just half an hour, because after the half an hour that we got, he was just for, I think, 5 or 10 minutes more with the Slovenian media, talking in Slovenian. Of course, I didn't got it. But yeah, I mean, there were much obligations for him. Not just for him, to be honest, for all the riders, because they're testing material, testing even drinks, or, I mean, all the stuff that they got with the sponsors, taking pictures, not just on the hotel, but on the roads. But to be honest, it is, of course, not vacation time for them, but they are kind of relaxed and just having fun with the teams that they were not in, in touch with for a long time.
Have they, Danny, to your knowledge, I don't think I've seen anything, but to your knowledge, have they yet done their, have they done their test on the called the Rates? The sort of annual, or is that in January usually? Is it, was it in January last year when he broke the record, or was it in December? I can't remember. I think January.
I do think it was in December, but maybe I'm mistaken.
I saw pictures of queues on the Codorates, because all of the teams pretty much use that now for testing, or also, I think in some cases, for photos.
That's what I'm going to say. I mean, they were arriving, Codorates. In fact, the day we were there, all the press or all the media were there. They were riding Codorates. Indeed, today Pogacar did Codorates more times than the rest of the teammates. I don't know, just probably to test his legs or something like that. But the final exam, the proper test on Codorates, I think has to be done yet. As probably, I don't know, maybe he wants to get the COM again this year.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar, Danny. You're probably too young to be too familiar, and you're fortunate not to be too familiar with the rider, familiar to older listeners, so his name is Riccardo Ricco, the Italian rider. Of course, you know who I'm talking about. It's one of my sort of guilty, I don't know if guilty pleasures is the right, guilty follows on Instagram, and he's a very prolific poster on Instagram, and he also organizes now these little training camps in Benidorm. In fact, I think he's been there the last couple of days. And also in the last few weeks and months, of course, this is a rider who was kind of, well, very much disgraced. In fact, so much so he's banned for life, even from official sort of Gran Fondos and stuff like that, because he was caught doping on at least two occasions. But recently he started organizing these sort of attempts on Strava, KOMs, and filming them and putting them on YouTube. And he's always very sort of bullish about how good he could still be, and you know, the fact that he could still probably be competitive in the World Tour. And I think he was planning, in fact, no, he did. He did attempt the Codorates KOM a few weeks ago, and it was quite a respectable time. I think he was maybe in the top 10, but then he explained that he'd gone the wrong way on the Codorates, so it didn't really count. But yeah, we will be closely monitoring Strava over the next few weeks to see whether he can, Pogacar that is, take a few more seconds off that KOM. Danny, any word on whether he was going well generally?
Yeah, I mean, everything were going well, but to be honest, it was not that sunny this time of the year. Of course, all the teams came to that Costa Blanca area, not just because of that, maybe, but most of it could be related to the weather. And I don't know if people has seen Visma training this week, but It was raining a lot in Valencia, in Oliva. They were based in Oliva. But yeah, in Benidorm, it was not raining that much, but not as sunny as probably they were expecting to be.
Well, there's plenty of other things to do in Benidorm when it's raining, if the weather's too bad to ride your bike. Danny, I said we'd hear a little bit more from Pogacar. We will now. This is a bit more from his press conference the other day, which you attended. And then we're also going to hear at the end from his coach, Javi Sola, who, of course, took over as Pogacar's coach a couple of years ago now, and that brought about another sort of significant improvement in his performances. And then we're going to hear as well from Jeroen Swart, who I don't have his official title in front of me. Is he head of performance? Head of performance. So that's Javi Sola and Jeroen Swart we're going to hear at the end of this extract from the Pogacar press conference.
Imagine you would win Milan-Sanremo and Paris-Roubaix this year. Would you feel that your career is complete when you win these races?
Yeah, if I ever win these two races, then yeah, I would think more or less that there's not much more you can do, but there's always something else. No, there's a lot of 1 week races I haven't been to yet, and Vuelta as well. And yeah, there's just there's so many things left always to try to win, and in different scenarios. And yeah, but then the years are going really fast, and there's maybe not so much time to try to win everything that is left. I will not deny that this. It was easy to arrive to this to the top, like you said, and it's not easy also to stay on the top. But we work for that really, really hard, and obviously you get tired as well in the season. It's a lot of tension, a lot of media, a lot of obligations to sponsors, and yeah, it's I would say it's tough, but it's not too bad. So I try to enjoy this moment in the last few years that I've been blessed to be on the top, and try to make most of it as well for my life and for people around me. So yeah, it's all worth it. So yeah, sometimes I would also like just to, I don't know, do a few 1 week races in the first part of the season, go to altitude and then tour. But for me, that's just not me. And I completely understand everybody else. Everybody need to win different races. I totally respect Remco's decision not to do classics, because yeah, it's not easy to do. I mean, in classics it's just one day you go there, it's not so much. It is like everything is concentrated on that day, but it's not like pressure like in the tour where you every day you need to focus for the big goal. And of course, tour is way more stressful. Yeah, so it. It's impossible to have same amount of fun when you go every day deep on the bike and you get tired. So, but you work there at the tour. You work for 21 stages, and then after you are happy what you've done.
Tadej, Javi Sola was here talking about you, training, whatever. I want to know, what does him gives you that no other training has ever gifted you?
I think I had a lot of coaches in my life since I'm a kid, and every coach is a little bit different. But I think with Javier we built quite good relationship. You know, every training when I upload the file or finishes, or I don't even finish the training yet, he texts me how the things are, and of course sometimes I'm annoyed by it, but and I don't reply immediately, because sometimes when you come home from training, you want shower, eat, and just like recover a little bit. And But yeah, he doesn't mind if I don't answer, you know, immediately, and he understands also. But it shows that he really cares about how I feel, how my day is going, not just the training. And I think this is really important when you have a coach that you can talk to each other about anything also, and you have really good relationship.
Has he changed you a little bit as a rider, or is something natural, you think?
I don't think he changed me as a rider at all, but yeah, we work well together, and of course I improved since I'm with him also, but I improved every year until now. So.
We both have the same opinion, I think, but I'll let Javier answer that.
I think it's a similar question last year, that how much I improved, something that we cannot really know, no? But he's in an age that is maturing every year a little bit. Also, he has more experience. Also, he can assimilate better the training. So, I think he can still improve, for sure. We will see what is the level, no? That he can arrive. But also, he's a rider that is very hard worker. He's taking concerns about all the details. So, we don't know, no? What is the real link that... I think the more important is that he's working hard, he's motivated, and that's it, the field for keep doing good.
I agree with Javier. I think he still has indications that he could improve still a little bit. I think the margin for improvement gets smaller and smaller each year, but we also thought two years ago, you know, we had no idea how much he could improve, and he has improved dramatically. But I think the changes now will be much smaller. It's more about being able to sustain that level. And what you talk about in terms of the mental fatigue is definitely a factor. I don't think it's about age, you know. From a biological perspective, until over 30, it's not really a big factor in terms of aging. It's more about maintaining the motivation and drive to be able to put in the work that's required to reach that level, and also the motivation to achieve the results. And that's important. And there are various things that go into that. You know, the novelty of the goal. Also, keeping too many, away excessive distractions and things that impact on your mental energy. And so it's a lot of different factors.
Danny, another big theme, I think, well, of this winter, but it's going to be a theme in... a year, another year, 2026, when Pogacar is going to dominate the narratives. He's going to dominate the conversation. But that big theme, is he peaking? Has he peaked? Has he even sort of teetered over the peak? Or is he indeed still improving? Danny, I think the race program tells us something we probably already knew, but I think that's significant, that sort of stimuli and being sort of stimulated by his goals and, well, the sort of enjoyment factor, this is a big fuel source for him. And I think that's recognized by the people around him, that he needs to be having fun and enjoying himself to sort of stave off that mental fatigue that Javi Sola, I think, and Jeroen Swart talked about there. And that maybe explains why there are so many, well, a high percentage of big one-day races in the first part of his calendar and no stage races until Romandy in April.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I would say last year was the first time that Pogacar switched a bit in this... this say that he's used to say now of having fun riding. Last year was the first time that he talked about the Tour de France, especially as kind of a mandatory thing for him, as a race he of course have to go, not really wants or enjoy going, but have to go. And the rest of the calendar, I think, is especially focused on that, on the wanting of Tadej of being there, racing there, winning there, because Romandy and Swiss are races that he has not done yet. So There's a few that he has not done yet. Those are two of them. But of course, it is something so important for him and for the team, of course, to have him kind of happy choosing the calendar that he wants to choose. It's something that he wants out.
Yeah, he dictates now, doesn't he? I don't think Tadej Pogacar goes into the meeting at the December camp where riders define their program with the director sportifs and just sort of gets a printed sheet of paper with his schedule on it. I think he's got a pretty significant say in where he goes. And well, that calendar, we're going to talk about it more now. As we said before, it starts with Strade Bianche. Not the first time he's done that. Started with Strade Bianche, then it's a 2-week break, isn't it, until Milan-San Remo. Then another 2-week break to the Tour of Flanders. Then another 2 weeks to Roubaix. Another 2 weeks to Liège-Bastogne-Liège. You can see the pattern developing. And then immediately after Liège, he sort of pivots to stage racing mode. Romandie, how many days is Romandie, Danny? Because we've got this sort of perversity now.
Is it where six days.
Romandie, of course, being a region of Switzerland, a relatively small proportion of Switzerland. It's not half of Switzerland, French-speaking part of Switzerland. And that is now longer than the Tour of Switzerland, which has been cut down to 5 days because the organisers want it to run parallel to a women's race. And they want five stages of each one of those, the men's and women's, on the same days. So, Danny, I thought we'd play a bit of a game now, or as we sort of lapse into speculation about whether this is a good race program or a bad one, or whether Pogacar is going to succeed or fail. I suggest we each put forward a sort of bull and bear case, so a worst case scenario and a best case scenario and a worst case scenario for this race program. Danny, shall I start?
Shall I start? Let's go. I want to take advantage of your prediction first.
Okay. I mean, predictions is maybe stretching things, but in the name of speculation. So the bull case. So why this could work perfectly. We talked about the fun factor. We talked about him, the sort of mental freshness which will come from doing all of these one-day races early on. I think those two-week windows between all of those one-day races mean that any sort of ambiguity, any question about whether he should be staying in the particular location or going home to Monaco, that's sort of taken away. It's obvious that if he's got 2 weeks, he's always going to be going home, back and forth, spending more time probably with Ushka. Don't know what her race program is, or spending time doing whatever else he wants to do as well as training. So I think that's a positive. Look at the races themselves. Well, Strade Bianche, I mean, we know that he can win that usually wins it in the same fashion with a sort of emphatic solo breakaway. Probably nothing to suggest that he can't do that again. San Remo next, how can he finally sort of crack the code in San Remo? I think most of us think that's going to be an even bigger challenge than Paris-Roubaix, but he's assembled now 3 or 4 years of sort of good feedback of precedence that he can use, and particularly the team can look back at what happened last year, particularly with things like positioning on the Cipressa, the riders they used on the Cipressa. What did we have this year? Was it the 5-minute Cipressa that they talked about, this sort of mythical 5-minute Cipressa? And I can't remember six?
Was it 9 minutes?
It might be nine. the Cipressa would be nine. And did they do it or not? I can't remember.
I think they did. Let me check about it.
While you check, anyway, the point is that I think that they will refine that whole process. And all it takes is what they really need is for Van der Poel to not be at his best. Unfortunately, he's a guy who tends to peak when he wants to peak, and it comes into the classics season exactly as he wants to. into the classic season. They've also got to deal with Ganna, who, of course, stuck with Pogacar and Van der Poel on Chipressa last year. But I think he could do it. Tour of Flanders, we know that he can win that. Paris-Roubaix, how can he win that? Danny, I don't want to tempt fate and I don't want to wish ill upon Mathieu van der Poel, but I think van der Poel's taken a lot of risks in Paris-Roubaix over the last few years. And unless I'm forgetting something, I don't think he's ever paid for those risks that he has taken, whether it's sort of going off the road, going off the cobbles into grass verges and whatever. But sometimes it feels as though he has been sort of dicing with disaster a little bit. And I know that he's such a good bike handler that he can afford to maybe take those risks. But we saw what happened to Pogacar last year when he went off the road. So that could be an avenue for Pogacar at Paris-Roubaix. Obviously, we don't want anyone to crash. Liège-Bastogne-Liège, again, we know that he can win that. And then he does Romandy immediately after Liège. Romandy, I guess the big concern there is going to be the weather, because it's always absolutely atrocious at Romandy. It has been for many years, but there's nothing there, I think, that will cause him any undue concern. Then there'll be a big block of altitude, I imagine. Tour de Suisse, 5 days, as opposed to, I'm still going to call it the Dauphiné. The Dauphiné is 8 days, so there'll be extra sort of freshness that will come with doing only 5 days rather than 8 days. And he can come into the Tour de France probably fresher than he was even this year. Is he going to be undercooked? Well, that's maybe something to talk about in when we talk about the bear case. But I can see it. Well, they're obviously prioritizing mental freshness. And given the way Pogacar finished the tour last year, the kind of things he was saying, okay, we know that he had the knee problem. Danny, I was curious. I was interested to note that no one asked him about that in the press conference, because I think that could be quite significant. You know, if there is a problem there that could recur, flare up, that could potentially have an impact on not just this year, but the rest of his career. Anyway, I think he can come into the Tour de France fresh and, well, this is the bull case. He can win every single one of those races I've just mentioned.
Basically, yeah.
You set out for us, Danny, and I'm sure you've probably got in different and more insightful ideas about how it's all going to work out, but how or why, in your opinion, is this a perfect race program for him?
I don't know if he's the perfect one, but something that it clearly surprised me, or I don't know if to say surprised, but catch my attention, was that it is the year or the season that Pogacar is going to ride less before the Tour de France in his career. Indeed, I read a data about it that no rider has ever won the Tour de France with less than 20 race days before the start. Pogacar is going to have 16 this year.
Wow.
I said there was no rider to ever do it. Of course, there was one called Eddy Merckx. But there's no rider since Eddy Merckx to ever do it. And Pogacar is going to ride or Merckx to go compete.
Merckx had few. No, surely not. I can't think of a season when Merckx would have had fewer than 20 race days. Never.
Before the Tour de France, right?
Yeah, yeah. Merckx would always have had more than that.
Could be the first one then.
I would guess so. I mean, knowing what race programs used to be like, I think the only situation I can imagine in which someone would have had fewer races, and that would have been if someone had been injured,
yeah,
or crashed. And no one comes to mind, I must say, even going back to sort of the 60s.
Could we check it, but yeah, of course, it's something that is not that common. There's the thing we want to say at the end. 16 day races before the Tour de France is not that much, but Pogacar has underlined in his press conference that he's not riding pretty much. I mean, he's not getting exhausted by the race days that he has at the end of the year. Indeed, last year he had 60 something day races, while other riders have, we all know, even 80 or more. So I don't know if it's the perfect way to do it, but of course he's going to arrive, if nothing strange happens, injuries, crashes, whatever, he's going to arrive so fresh to the Tour de France, which is probably the best way for him to arrive, because we saw it last year and we've talking about it for not the first time in this podcast, but what we saw last year in Pogacar's reaction, in Pogacar's mind during the Tour de France was something new for everybody. And I think even for him. So probably his main goal now, as he has to go to the Tour de France and he has to go there to win the Tour de France, is to have fun and be fresh during the rest of the of the year. So I think that's the main thing to consider this calendar, like a good path to overcome or to reach that goal.
Okay. Now the bear case, where it's all going to go wrong, where it's all going to fall apart. We hope not. We hope not from him on his behalf. Strade Bianche, he'll get beaten by Tom Pidcock. Pidcock wasn't that far. He looked competitive last year with him. Of course, then there was the crash and that probably conditioned the rest of Pidcock's race. Milan-San Remo, same's going to happen as has happened the last couple of years. There're going to be fireworks on the Cipressa, but ultimately it won't be enough to break Mathieu van der Poel. He loses to van der Poel again. Flanders, which is not inconceivable. Roubaix, van der Poel beats him for a third time. And I remember us talking about this when he unveiled his race program, I think last year. And it wasn't dissimilar. Again, the emphasis was very much on one-day races last year. And we talked about the eventuality of Pogacar getting to sort of Liège or getting to the Ardennes with no wins or no wins in any of the races that he'd been targeting, the big races, one day races that he'd been targeting, and how this could start. Certainly, it could feed a sort of media narrative about decline or about crisis, Pogacar being in the doldrums, and how that itself could sort of could drag him further down. And that can definitely happen. There is no doubt that whether it's this year or whether it's in 3 years or 5 years, that Pogacar does start to experience the first kind of slump in his career. And it might be due to misfortune, or it might be due to illness or injury, or the emergence of some new kind of supernova, that the noise around that will become its own sort of problem, I think, for him to deal with. And that could happen. That could happen this spring. And again, it could be second places. It could be 5 second places in all of those classics. And all of a sudden, it starts to look as though he's in a kind of negative spiral. Then Romandy. Well, I mentioned the weather in Romandy. That's a race that comes with its own risks, I think, because of the weather. And I suppose, you know, from there, that I don't need to set out exactly how it's going to continue to be a disaster. But my basic point is that if he gets to the end of April and things aren't looking good, then, as I just sort of alluded to, for the first time in his career, he could be facing and so having to deal with this idea that at 27 years of age, he has already peaked, he's already plateaued, and the decline is going to start now. To mitigate that, and this is the sort of, well, this is the bear case, so it should all be negative. It should all be negative, Danny. I should be foretelling the absolute, you know, capitulation of Tadej Pogacar here. But in mitigation to all of what I've just said, I do think that one of his great strengths is that he doesn't put too much pressure on himself or achieving any particular objective. He said this in the press conference. He said that, you know, even Roubaix isn't an obsession. Winning a fifth tour isn't an obsession. And I think whereas those sort of fixations have in the past and could have dragged riders down, and they've created these sort of psychosis is too sort of extreme a term, but they've kind of created these mental blocks. We've never seen that from Pogacar, and I think he's really good also, and we're going to hear from a teammate in just in a few minutes and talking about the kind of atmosphere, the ambience that Pogacar brings to the team. I think he's really good at sort of lightening the atmosphere around him. And that obviously helps as well when the pressure does come. So I find myself not really believing in my pessimistic prediction for Pogacar's season. Danny, how could it go wrong in your opinion?
You know what happened here is that I was thinking while listening to you and thinking about the worst case scenario for Pogacar. I mean, if Van der Poel beats him in 2, 3, 4 races this in this first half of the year, don't you think that it will not be like that bad for Pogacar if he has like almost 5, 6, 7 podiums before the Tour de France, even without winning, which is something let's say difficult to imagine, but even just with podiums, please understand us, but just with podiums, I don't really see him being that negative.
I suppose the real worst case scenario, of course, is something is him getting sick or crashes or all things that, you know, we have to sort of factor in when we speculate about any one season. I mean, the average rider will crash several times a year. They'll be sick several times a year. I certainly have the impression, I've said this on the podcast before, this impression that Pogacar's margin is over the other riders is so great relatively, he doesn't go as close to the sort of razor's edge, whether that be in terms of kind of his health and his body. So he's not going as deep. He doesn't have to go as deep as everyone else. He's not as sort of diminished at the end of races as everyone else. And also because he doesn't have to maybe take the same risks in terms of bike handling that some of the riders take, that the third factor to add in is that he gets more space in the peloton than anyone else. I think his risk, or the risk of him crashing and having problems or getting ill, is maybe slightly less than that of other riders.
Yeah, could be, but well, of course, it's something that every rider has in his mind. But to sum up what we were just saying, I don't see any really bad scenario for Pogacar if nothing strange happens, but that strange thing could happen. I mean, we saw it 2 years ago with his fall, with his crash in Liège. Indeed, we did not see that crash because it was not the TV on yet, but that kind of things is the only thing that I can see him just crashing out, not just physically, but mentally before the Tour de France.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Well, Danny, enough about Tadej Pogacar. I think we're probably going to mention him again at some point during the 2026 season. Let's just talk now for a moment about what else we learned from UAE, other race programs, primarily particularly the sort of GC leaders. If Pogacar, well, we know he's doing the Tour de France, we know he's not doing the Giro d'Italia. Who is doing the Giro d'Italia for them? What's Isaac Del Toro doing, for example? What else do we know about other sort of fringe GC leaders like Adam Yates and so on and so forth? Danny, what can you tell us about Almeida et al?
Yeah, I mean, Almeida was the first one to do the press conference over there. Was the shortest press conference, as he's a very calm guy, just talking about his calendar. And of course, he's there has been a switch in team's structure, talking about the calendar, because Almeida was like the shade of Pogacar last year in every big race. And this year, something happened or something changed, let's say, with the departure of Juan Ayuso as well, because Almeida is doing Giro and Vuelta, and is Isaac Del Toro who's going to be the shade of Pogacar and at the Tour de France. José Fernández Machín talked about this, underlining that probably the decision came up with the desire of the team to not giving that much pressure to Del Toro at the Giro d'Italia, because after what happened last year, or this year indeed, he would have the pressure to win it or win it there. I don't know if you agree with this, because probably, well, we all agree that Tour de France has much bigger pressure than Giro d'Italia, and I don't know if there's much or more pressure in winning Giro d'Italia or doing well, or even having a podium at the Tour de France.
I think I would have done with Del Toro what they are doing. I would send him to the Tour de France as well. Particularly, you know, with the first few stages, the way they are, sort of punchy first few stages, the team time trial in Barcelona as well. I think it's probably a wise decision. Danny, was he at the camp, Del Toro?
Yeah, he was at the camp. Was the second press conference after right after Almeida, a bit longer because there were much journalists from South America and Central America, from Mexico. So yeah, of course, Del Toro has a big impact, not just in Mexico, but in all the world and in the Spanish native countries. So yeah, he was at the camp, and he's just, you know, my impression with him is that he is just, he still is like a kid over there. I mean, you can see Pogacar and Almeida's like grown up men, like with this kind of, I don't know if talk about aura or something like that, but Del Toro is over there just like a kid in a summer camp, you know, being so relaxed, don't wanting to talk, just yes or no, and it could be related to what happened with his calendar this year. Like, is, of course, we want to.
What, you think he's unhappy?
No, not at all, not at all. I mean, he is happy, but it's a different personality from the others.
His program, incidentally, UAE Tour, starts with the UAE Tour on 16th of February, then he goes to Strade Bianche. He'll be formidable with Pogacar, of course. We remember what Del Toro did in Siena, the Siena stage in the Giro d'Italia last year. He then does Tirreno Adriatico, Milan San Remo, where I imagine he'll have a key role on the Cipressa. Hasn't quite got that right. Didn't quite get it right last year and the year before, I don't think. After that, he'll be going to the Tour of the Basque Country, one of the few one-week stage races, of course, that Pogacar has not yet won. Primoz Roglic will be at the Basque Country as well. Then he's going to the race we will continue stubbornly to call the Dauphiné. And then he's going to do the Tour de France, as we said, in support of Pogacar. Danny, that's Almeida and Del Toro. I talked about sort of fringe GC leaders. Obviously, Ayuso has gone now, but likes of Adam Yates is still in the team. Sivakov is more, he's been more of a sort of super domestique of late. But any other sort of significant, I can see Adam Yates is down for the Giro d'Italia, but any other significant news to give us on other race programs?
Not pretty much, because, you know, what UAE is doing this year and the last year is that the main riders, the one that are talking at the press conference, not on the one-by-one interviews, of course, they talk about their calendar. But in the one-on-ones, guys, the rest of the team, they are just trying, or most of them are trying to let the work of their calendars to the team, the communication team from UAE. So it's not that much news on calendar. Of course, the team for the Tour de France could be completed if we take this from from the news. But besides that, it's not that much of a big news.
Jan Christen, he's going to the Giro d'Italia as well, isn't he?
We have to remember that last year, of course, he was a year younger, but last year at the training camp, he talked about La Vuelta. He was going to do La Vuelta. He was going to debut in a Grand Tour in La Vuelta, and finally he didn't. So, of course, the Giro is much sooner in the year, but things could happen. It's happening something similar this year. I was told that Pablo Torres is making his debut in La Vuelta next year, but of course he's not saying that yet, as pretty much many things can happen, as happened with Jan Christen last year.
I was going to say that there was nowhere really where they looked exposed last year. I know there were sort of question marks about Pollitt on certain stages. He was maybe better in climbing stages at times than people expected, and not quite as good on the flat as some people expected. And there's always this question with UAE whether they have too much power, horsepower on them on the climbs, and not enough on the flat. They haven't invested that heavily over the years in riders of the sort of Pollitt type. One rider who could potentially do that kind of job, Danny, is Florian Vermeersch. Now, I mentioned in the intro to today's podcast that Tadej Pogacar had been branded a criminal, or his bike riding was described as criminal, at least, is what the two riders in question actually said. Those two riders were Pollitt and Florian Vermeersch. You spoke to Florian Vermeersch at the UAE training camp in Benidorm last week, didn't you, Danny? We're going to hear a bit of that now. We know, we've spoken to him before, we know that he's a fascinating cat, not your average pro bike rider, got some really interesting sort of pastimes and interests, and we'll find out a bit more about them now.
We were talking off the mic, some hobbies of or other sports you like, let's say. Let's talk about it for a bit. Who are you supporting in football?
Yes, I'm a big Newcastle United fan since 4 or 5 years. I can't really remember. And it's something I follow closely. Something different than cycling. It's still about sports. And yeah, it's something I've been interested in since I was a kid. Before I was a cyclist, I played soccer until I was 9. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if many people know it, but you're apart from football, of course, you're very much into history. You like it. How is like where does it come from?
I've always had really good teachers in high school, which let's say sparked the interest, and which was the reason why I always loved to go to the history courses. And so yeah, over time when we traveled, also with my parents, I have to say. We were always like, how would you call it, active travelers. Like we would visit towns, historical places, and that kind of stuff, which yeah kept the interest alive, and which is why I'm still interested in that kind of things until today.
I don't know. Are you still a university student or part of?
Yeah. I'm not very proud of it, but I've put my studies on hold for the moment because I find it really difficult to combine everything. It's something I'm not super proud of, but sometimes you have to admit that that it's not working the best way. So I've decided to choose my priorities for the moment, and which is being a professional cyclist.
Mm-hmm. And any era historical figure you really enjoy reading about, or
Yeah, I've always been really fascinated about Winston Churchill.
He's
one of the great politicians, the great statesmen, and I really love to read about some things he did. Also, he always had some good, sayings, like some wise words. I think he was a remarkable leader.
You are kind of a politician too, or not?
Yeah, just because you've done your research. Yeah,
we're talking about hobbies, not cycling, it's interesting to know this part of the riders, not on the bike. Of course, I'm gonna ask some bike questions, cycling questions, but it's interesting to see some interest outside the road.
Yeah, but for me, this is really important to have some other interests outside of cycling, because I find in cycling is such a specific world, and it's so easy when you go to a race to stay in your bubble and like not really knowing what's going on in the world. So I always try to keep a hold of how the situation is at home, and to have some other interests to keep a wider view of life outside of cycling, because we are living in such a specific world that's not comparable to other worlds.
Mm-hmm. But you're not still serving as councillor in Belgium?
Yes, I am.
You are actually.
I got re-elected last year. So I'm still there, and this is something I really want to keep doing, because it's serving my city, serving the people that live in it, and I find it really important to do my best for those people, and I really want to continue also with this after my career. So now is a good time for me to stay a bit on the background and to learn and to see how things go, because things can get very technical and I'm still young, so I have to learn a lot.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about Roubaix fifth this year with the team, but I'm so interested to know how is the approach to the race having Tade on the team for that specific classic or Flanders or whatever, but for the classics.
How can I say? The good thing with Tade is he's always relaxed. He never seems stressed or anything like that. So he always keeps the atmosphere good, and also because he knows how good he is. It's an advantage of him. But I would say there's not much stress in advance. Of course, the day itself and the day before, we are focused, but we always try to keep it as light as possible to not get too overwhelmed, because the day itself is always with all the people and the crowd can always be a bit stressful and a bit overwhelming. So Tade always tries to keep everybody relaxed, and he doesn't want to talk too much about the race as well until the meeting, of course. But before, we don't really talk too much about the race, because we like to joke and talk about other things as well. And that's one of the things I've experienced this year, and that the approach to every classic was very very relaxed and very nice. I can't complain about that.
Mm-hmm. You're one of the undoubtedly best classic riders in the world, but I want to know, for people to understand, how difficult is or how unique is to see Tade or a GC rider going to the classics and being so successful as he is.
Yeah, he's one of the big exceptions in cycling. It's crazy to see what he can do on the bike. If it's flat on the cobbles, uphill on the cobbles, or in the mountains, he can do it all. And I know, and I feel very privileged to be one of his teammates, and also that I can say that to be one of his friends is something very special. It's hard to describe if you haven't seen it how good he is. I mean, if you're a bike rider yourself, then and you go on a training ride with him, then you just always see how good he is and how hard he can ride the bike. It's, I would say it's a bit criminal sometimes.
Criminal is a good word to describe it.
Well, Danny, there's one thing I didn't understand in that interview. He said he was a football fan, but then he said he supports Newcastle, which seems to be a contradiction in terms.
This could be an internal joke that I don't understand from Spain, but I guess where you're trying to say.
Yeah. Well, any mention of football usually loses us about 50% of our listenership anyway. But fascinating stuff there. I'm not sure I've heard a pro bike rider describe William Churchill as one of their... he didn't really say he was a role model or inspiration, but he said he was fascinated by him. And it was also fascinating to hear him talk about Tadej Pogacar and just how he is, how he sort of behaves around the team. It's kind of what we see. It's kind of what we observe, and whether it's on the ground at races or on social media videos, but to have it sort of confirmed kind of spontaneously, not because you were pressing him, but confirmed spontaneously by someone like Vermeersch, I thought was quite illuminating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And he is one of the riders that have a little news on his calendar, as he's at the moment he's projected to race the Giro d'Italia this year, his first Grand Tour with the team, as this is going to be his second season at the UAE. But of course, he's very interesting guy to talk with, not just because of the all the previews or the off bike issues that we've talked about, but of course with his relationship with Pogacar, as he's part of, if we divide Pogacar team in Grand Tour team and Classic team, of course Vermeersch would be like a very key role in that Classic team of UAE, as he's doing a magnificent job, not just in the classes, but of course, especially in Paris-Roubaix and Tour de Flanders.
I guess, although the Giro is on his calendar, because of what I talked about a minute ago, because they don't have a huge number of riders whose sort of speciality is kind of on the flat, even if he's not in the provisional starting lineup for the Tour de France, I guess he'll probably be on standby, be one of those guys who, should something go wrong, should something happen to Niels Pollitt or Niels Pollitt not be on form, then I would say Vermeersch is probably on some kind of long list for the Tour de France. That would be my guess, along with, I don't know, maybe the likes of Morgado was a guy who last year showed flashes, brilliant flashes, as he has done throughout his pro career so far. Didn't have a great sort of second half of the season, but he's another one who I would have thought is getting towards the age where he would be considered for the Tour de France. He's down to start in Mallorca, do the Figuera Champions Classic, Algarve, then Flanders, and he's actually down for the Giro d'Italia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Vermeersch is interesting what you say, because he is, I think most of the people would think about Pollitt as the biggest guy. I mean, talking about like the physique, the biggest guy on the team, but indeed is Vermeersch is the biggest guy on the team. He doesn't seem to be, but he is, and yeah, he's probably the ideal type of rider to do that job in the Tour de France or in other races, of course.
Danny, I have to reproach you something, though. I sort of reproached myself earlier for not pressing Kjell Kallstrom on Sylvain Adams showing up to races later in the year and riding with the team. When he said, "I'm a big Newcastle fan," how the hell did you not ask him why?
Because I did ask him... why, I cannot remember if it was on tape or not.
I think it was off tape because it wasn't an interview that I heard. I was trying to think of Belgian connections in Newcastle. They used to have a player, Philippe Albert, but that's going a long way back. I doubt it's got something to do with that. I mean, black and white kit. I don't know, the Magpies and UAE riding a black and white kit. Could it be that? Needless to say, the first time I see Florian Vermeersch at a race, I'm going to make a beeline towards him and interrogate him, cross-examine him on why the hell he supports Newcastle.
He just said to me that he is following Newcastle from some years ago and nothing really special connected with the team. But indeed, he attended a game this year for the first time, a special game against Manchester City, and Newcastle won that game, Daniel, for you to know.
Yeah.
So of course Florian was super happy to be there, and he said to me that it was probably one of the best experiences of the year so far.
Wow. Watching Newcastle beat my team Arsenal over the last couple of years has been one of the worst experiences of my years. Danny, well, I think that sort of rounds up the UAE team camp nicely, whetted our appetite for 2026. As I said, you're going to be back next week with a similar bulletin, maybe even a more sort of titillating bulletin from Little Trek, because there was all sorts going on at that particular training camp. But that will be for next week. In the meantime, thank you very much, Danny, for your sterling reporting.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Daniel. I forgot to call you Mr. Daniel, or Don Daniel.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Free, and Lionel Burney.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details. Because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose, by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.